Good evening, and welcome to Swords in Space on the AMDG Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicholas Wansbutter, and I'm joined again for the second week in a row by Matthew Zepp from Brav's Index and Jason Fraser from The Culture of Comics, which is another one of the radio shows on AMDG. And tonight we're going to be talking about kind of two topics in one, but closely related. We're going to talk about the zombie genre and its great popularity. I've called it a craze in the show description. And then we're going to be talking about the most recently released show in that genre, being World War Z. I'm sure most of our listeners would think of it as World War Z, but I'm as Canadian as it gets, so I'm going to stick to the proper pronunciation. But I think Matthew and Jason will be willing to accommodate listeners and call it by the American name. And
the
music
Canadian.
You heard... Right, but I think I heard you calling it a World War Z when we were discussing this idea for a show a few weeks ago.
we'll fight later. You get this intro done.
Yeah. So the music you heard was the theme song from that, and we'll play more of it when we close out the show. And, of course, you can find Swords in Space on the web at www.swordsandspace.com, all one word, and it's the and spelled out, not the little and symbol. And you can also find us on Facebook, which is frequently updated, certainly whenever we have a new show up. You can get the link there, and that's facebook.com/swordsandspace. So let's start out the show. I think I wanted to talk about kind of the history of zombies. Like, where does the idea of zombies come from? And Matthew, I know you've done some research in this for some of your own writings, so maybe you can give us a little bit of the fruits of your labor on where this whole concept of zombies comes from.
Yeah, I wish I could. I was actually looking for these notes, and I can't find them, which is very discouraging, but I remember a lot. But first, I'd like to make sure that we're all on the same page here as to the exact definition of a zombie, because if you deal with fanboys, this is actually a very, you know, philosophical and precise question. So I'm going to be operating under the guise of zombie as reanimated dead body. How's that sound?
All right, that sounds broad enough, because, yeah, it's a good point you make just at the start there. I suppose some people might not consider the fast zombies true zombies.
Yeah, I've read that. They say because they haven't died, they were infected, they didn't actually physically die, therefore, you know, it's not really a zombie. I mean, these are not the kind of arguments you really want to have around a water cooler, but, you know, it happens.
All right. So, but, I mean, I'm not as into the culture, so I'm just wondering, is it just the fact that a lot of the, quote, fast, unquote, zombies didn't die before they reanimated, or is there, do people have a difficulty with the fact that instead of shambling and groaning, they're, you know, running around?
Yeah.
Because,
well,
like Dawn of the Dead,
kind of,
the remake, they're fast, but people clearly die in that film before they get up again as fast zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't want to jump the gun into the movies, but you're absolutely right there. And, I mean, the fast zombie has kind of become the popular zombie these days, especially in movies and video games. So I think,
right,
though, Dawn of the Dead remake is kind of the only one that really explicitly shows them dying, because I know the movie 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later, it's an infection, and in World War Z, it's an infection. So,
all right.
Yeah, but yeah,
well,
to get
before
into...
We delve in, yeah, before we delve into the history, I'm just going to quickly ask Jason, as a big fan of the genre, is that a good workable definition?
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. I'll tell you what, let me just share real quick. I know we got to keep it moving, but I think the fast zombies are scarier, and I think by definition they're still dead, they're infected, but they essentially they've been taken over. But I think it's just scary to think that there's somebody who is going to come at you full speed, and you can shoot them, you can hurt them, and they're just not going to stop because they don't have the fat, the pain. They don't feel the pain we do. They don't care. They broke an arm. Who cares? They're going to come at you. It's scary. That's right. Much scarier to me.
But, yeah, I tend to agree. But in terms of our definition of zombies, I'm thinking it might be a little overbroad because couldn't you say that vampires also would meet that definition? So isn't there an aspect of kind of the brain dead reanimated corpse or the like not independently thinking that is, kind of sets zombies apart from other forms of undead?
Well, I think the safest way to define it for us is probably just going to be walking dead. Because there's the pure term zombie, we know it doesn't necessarily mean what we know it to mean now. So, yeah, I think just walking dead, someone who's died, whether it be by a virus or be by horrible mutilation, they've died.
But isn't the kind of brainlessness something
absolutely.
That makes a zombie a zombie versus other kinds of undead that are still intelligent and talking and things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think a non-functioning, it's just an animal at that point or something worse. Yeah, it's just instinct, and that makes it scarier, and that's a zombie.
Right. Matthew, you agree?
Well, again, it totally depends on who's doing what with the subject matter, because in 20 days later, they're trying to cure it. And in, what's it called, A Dawn of the Dead went to, I think it was Day of the Dead afterward, the whole Bub thing, and Romero started playing with that with Land of the Dead and Day of the Dead. He finds that the zombies have, you know, memory, and they're able to discern how to manipulate objects with mild intelligence. So it starts creeping over a line. I'm not saying this is, you know, what a zombie is, but it's definitely where they've kind of started to experiment. So it's almost curable or reversed or a different mode, so much, not so much a dead thing is actually an animal that can adapt and da-da-da-da-da.
Okay. So what's the historical inspiration for zombies as we know them today?
Yeah, this might clarify it a bit. For those that have read kind of their history, the Epic of Gilgamesh, you might remember has, I think it's the goddess Ishtar goes to her dad after she's spurned by Gilgamesh, and she says, oh, I want revenge, and in order to have revenge, I want the netherworld, netherworld opened up and the undead to walk the earth and literally devour the living. So this is the oldest piece of literature we have in the world that I know of, and there's zombies in it, or at least there's the threat of zombies in it. And from there, we kind of, you know, there are mentions of it. There's Chinese myth, I mentioned in the Bible of the dead rising from the tombs, and I'm sure the church fathers addressed this, but I've never read it, but it doesn't exactly say if the souls are reunited with these bodies that have died, but there's definitely a mention at Christ's death of the dead walking the earth for a moment. And then we kind of get into, well, we do, we get into the Scandinavian and the European stories, the 11th century, 12th century, and they've got pagan and Christian elements in them. And these are the revenants. These are great stories. I've read these stories since I was a kid, and, man, nothing has scared me like these stories. They are written really well. And what this involved was a person would die, and usually they had some kind of sin or malignancy about their character, and they would come back. And there were some that were quite violent, some stories where they would literally take their revenge on somebody, usually close. They knew the person in life. Or they would sometimes be somewhat benign. There's one story of a baker who comes back to help his wife knead the bread, which, you know, is just creeping her all, like, get out. But this is a more rare kind. What I loved the best was the Scandinavian stories, where the Vikings especially, they would come back and they would just hack and slice. So the only way to stop them was to remove the head and put it at the thigh or to burn the body completely. And you have the same thing in kind of the Christian stories, where the body would have to be dismembered and or burnt. And for witches, what they would do if they didn't want to do that, they would tip the coffin upside down or open the coffin and put the witch so she was facing towards the center of the earth, so that if she tried to dig her way out, she'd just dig straight down. So there's all these wonderful stories that you can read about the history. And to address your question, because they preyed upon human beings, the line blurs between kind of vampire stories and revenant stories. So the vampire, I would argue, is actually an evolution of this legend.
Hmm. But isn't there some other historical context? I remember you were telling me something about in Haiti, there was to do with, was it voodoo or something? There was some practice of drugging individuals that
where
the zombie mythos comes from.
Yeah, and this will be a nice segue into Jason. Jason will lead us into the movies. It came from Africa, I believe. It was a serpent god that was being worshipped. But yeah, the slaves that were brought over to Haiti had a type of worship, and there was two types of priests, and I believe it was called the Bokar, someone can correct me if they know.
Yep.
And they would make what was called a zombie powder, and scientists have actually gone and tried to analyze this, and they do believe, in fact, that some forms of this did exist. I believe the main ingredient was gypsum weed, which is poisonous. And what they would do, the malignant priest would apply some of this on the left hand of their victim or left arm. It was believed that that had the fastest trip to the heart and would cause paralysis to the victim. They would still be alive and sensible, but kind of like pufferfish venom, if anyone's heard of that. It kind of knocks you out, but you're still alive. The person would be buried, funeral rites, and then the priest would come back later and dig the human up, and apparently the drug was so powerful that the person was very slow, disoriented, and basically a slave. And since it was believed he was dead, the family wasn't going to come looking for him. So that that was, you know, it's interesting. Scientists, I read some of the reports, they figured that if this was actually done, about one out of every 100 people that this was done on would actually survive long enough to be dug up. But we have Hollywood then start with the zombie craze from this. So you have movies like White Zombie that came out in 1932. I haven't seen it myself, but you'll always encounter it if you read up about zombie literature, especially the movies. And, I'll give it to Jason from there.
Thank you, sir.
Before we go into that, I'm fascinated with the story about the stuff in Haiti there. And would the people be kind of permanently brain damaged, I guess, after that poison, and they'd be kind of zombie-like for the rest of their time as they're acting as slaves? Or was it done for the purpose of the family not to look for them?
Do you know something about this, Jason?
I know that it essentially would kill the higher brain function. So the person's gone. The person as you know them is gone. I wouldn't say maybe their soul is gone, maybe it's not, but it kills higher brain functions, but they still function as a person. They just don't think like a person. So I don't believe there was any coming back or something like that. Hmm. I believe that was the point.
Yeah. You might be right, but the problem is people claim that this was done to them, and it's like, well, how do you scientifically verify that you were, you know, drugged and so on and so forth, and this all happened to you? I know there's a very famous case. The name escapes me, turn of the century, but, yeah, like Jason says, it was supposedly, you know, if you did survive this, just the oxygen deprivation from being buried for 24 to 36 hours would be enough to damage most people, let alone the drugs. But, yeah, the drug haze usually was reapplied with a kind of hallucinogen. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yes. The point of the zombie and the voodoo side was a lot of times, as you said, the Bokar and the Hungan, I believe, was the other side, the good side.
Yeah.
I say good. They're both questionable, but... The point was that they would take people who maybe they perceived as their enemies and make them their slaves. And I think that was a kind of a punishment. I mean, it comes right down to it. They're gonna quote unquote kill their enemies, and their enemies are gonna serve them until they experience body death at that point, since brain death has probably already happened. Voodoo's, I mean, it's creepy. It's creepy stuff. That the White Zombie movie you mentioned in 1932, a very good observation. And before I go on into the movies, does anybody have anything else in regards to that?
No, take it away, Jason.
No?
Go for it.
All right, very good.
Go ahead.
So let me tell you, the zombie in the film really really stayed in the realm of voodoo for 20 or 30 years. It really, there wasn't a zombie walking dead for a large amount of time. And that, of course, the real original version, the version we know today of a zombie came from George Romero in 1967?
I think it's 68.
That was George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, and that still a very, very scary movie made on an incredibly low budget. And that puts, that takes zombies out of the realm of brain-dead slaves and into the realm of brain-dead eating machines. Literally the walking dead, people who are clearly dead, people who have gaping, terrifying wounds, things that no person could really live through, getting up, walking around, and eating us. George Romero, maybe it doesn't stand up today like some other movies might, but George Romero's trilogy of The Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead really set the bar. Just like we talked with Alien last week, set the bar for the zombie movies to go to work from going forward. And there were several takes, and really, it did take off at the George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. We had all kinds of stuff. Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, The Hanging Woman, just some very, very odd and creepy movies throughout. Some were well made, most were not. I think we can all agree most were pretty bad, at least up through probably till Dawn of the Dead in 78. So we had about a 10-year gap of zombie movies that probably weren't the best, but they kept the culture going at that point. Of course, Dawn of the Dead came out in 1978, and that had some interesting subtext, and I know we like to talk about subtext here. Of course, Dawn of the Dead was George Romero's take on our consumer culture. For those who have not seen that movie, it takes place with a group of survivors from this horrible, horrible raising of the dead and overtaking of neighborhoods and cities. They go and hide out in a mall. And there's zombies in the mall, and if you watch it, you have to watch it to really see it, but it's kind of like we're all brain-dead idiots who go to the mall and just shop our lives away. So whether that's true or not, we can agree or disagree. After Dawn of the Dead, it really began to get a little rough again. As we got into the 80s in the zombie movies, they began to get, less subtext and a lot more gore. That really became the kind of the hallmark of a zombie movie in the 80s. You had some movies from Italian director Lucio Fulci. I tell you what, if you're a gore hound, check out some of his stuff. It is just terrifying. It's disgusting. You watch it and you go, why am I watching this? I don't even know why I'm watching this right now. It's so over the top and gross. The Beyond was an excellent movie from Lucio Fulci, though. It actually had some good story to it, and that was in 1981. Evil Dead in 1981, that's Sam Raimi. We recently saw a remake for that movie as well come out. Evil Dead also zombie, just like we had a discussion here earlier, gentlemen, zombie is so loosely defined that people do do a lot of different things with them in movies. Clearly, Evil Dead was a different take on a zombie because it's more almost like a demon tale. But there was some good stuff. We have Peter Jackson's, one of his first directorial debuts was a zombie movie called Brain Dead. Again, just so over the top and gory that it's just, it's incredible. It's just so twisted. Reanimator by Stuart Gordon, 1985. Great, great movie. A really interesting take on the zombie movies as well. 1985 also had The Return of the Living Dead, which was also a zombie movie played for laughs a little bit. Kind of cheesy and goofy, and zombies talked, and I don't know. Have you guys ever seen Return of the Living Dead before?
I don't believe I caught that one.
It's there's a pretty funny part where they're zombies are raised out of a cemetery, and these kids call for the police and the ambulance, and it shows up, and the zombies of course tear apart the paramedic, and then a zombie gets on the CB and goes, "Send more paramedics."
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one. Okay, thanks for that, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really, when you get into the 80s and the 70s, I think the hallmarks are, I think, of course, anything by George Romero, Reanimator, Evil Dead, those are hallmark. Those are tentpole kind of zombie movies, but then you look around the rest, the landscape is full of them, but they're not all good. They're very rarely good, but it just depends on what your take is, because if you like the idea of a zombie, you can find any kind of take on a zombie, I think, throughout. And we know, actually, there was a very, very good remake I shouldn't say remake. It was actually an original movie. The Serpent and the Rainbow in 1987, something like that.
I think it was 88, okay.
88, yeah. That one actually takes it back into the voodoo realm, and that's a very good movie. The zombies aren't traditional zombies, but also brings back the voodoo side of things. But the zombies, as we know them, they have been around since, as we said, 1968, and they have been going strong all along. I think the most recent examples, obviously, as we've already talked a little bit about the remake of Dawn of the Dead, a very good one, 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later. I would argue Cabin in the Woods is a good one, but that's debatable, admittedly, and I think we come up into World War Z, which has recently come out this week.
Well, and you even got the comedies. I mean, Shaun of the Dead is
mm-hmm.
it's clearly a zombie movie, but it's I found it pretty funny.
Oh,
but,
yeah, very.
Oh, you know, also decent in a zombie movie kind of way too.
You've got those awful Resident Evil movies, just awful, based off the video game,
now,
of course.
The Resident Evil with the I think I saw the first one and didn't bother with the rest of them, but I mean they seem to blow the box. I mean it's like a license to print money making another one of those movies, it seems.
You made the right call stepping up to part one. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
That was the exact right call, but it really is. Zombie movies as a whole, they can just go across the board. I think there's Quarantine. I'm just going down a list of zombie movies right now looking through, and there's some great ones. I have seen a great deal of these,
well,
unfortunately.
Quarantine is that's taking it into like the
virus.
Blair Witch Project type of style, but that one's actually like a remake of a Spanish movie.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Rec, or like REC, like for record, which I want to see that one because I watched the they don't actually have a preview on iTunes. They just have like the first minute and a half of it, and it looks pretty intense.
Yeah,
that's a good one. You should, if you are interested at all in taking a look at that movie,
yeah.
I don't think you'd be disappointed. It's a good one.
So
yeah, it's very psychological.
I was gonna see if we could talk about some recurring themes. Or recurring underlying themes, but it seems like the zombie format or genre is just so wide. I don't know if there really are recurring themes that could be linked between them. Are there?
In the good ones, there are. I think. I mean, like you obviously have for every good movie, you probably have six terrible ones, but or more. But I think there's when you have a good zombie movie or a good mythology behind it, there's some pretty reoccurring themes throughout.
I guess one reoccurring theme that comes to mind when I'm thinking of a lot of the good ones we've been discussing and the ones that I've seen is it all seems to be not just zombies, but like the so-called zombie apocalypse. That's a phrase that's so common. It's made its way into common parlance. It's like the zombies are everywhere. Like it's taken over the whole world. It's not just like a localized thing.
You're right.
Or is that something more recent?
I think it's been there for a while. We're starting to see an influx of other kinds of movies that are similar. So lots of end-of-the-world scenarios, but that's probably the scariest one out of all of those. Not the least realistic, but the scariest.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it's the breakdown and end of society. But I think a lot of zombie movies also kind of are takes on society or someone's view on how society works. It's a breakdown of our culture. What do we, you know, I think in most zombie movies, at least, like I said, the good ones, we tend to find out that the zombies are not necessarily the bad guys. They're there to eat you, they're there to kill you. But who are the real enemies in most of that? You know, it's other people. It's the survivor mentality takes over, the mob mentality, and we become animals as well. We're not very nice to each other when that kind of stuff happens. And I think that in all the good ones, that's a theme you see. They find another group of survivors, or they try to get into somewhere, and there's some bad people out there.
Okay. Matthew, anything else you could add in terms of recurring themes?
Oh yeah, excellent observations there by Jason. And I would, from historically looking at it, I would point to horror as being a vehicle through which we can express things that we normally don't like to. And I would, if you follow the path at least of the movies, I'm sure, we've got Apocalypse apocalyptic goings-on in, you know, Revelations and different religions and that. But when we hit the movies, we have voodoo, so it's sort of superstition is what people fear. And then when we hit the 60s, it's the nuclear age. I think Romero was kind of saying that with his Night of the Living Dead, it was a satellite re-entering radiation caused reanimation. And now in our age, around the 2000s, it's infection. That's what scares us, is infection. That's why we're having all these fast zombies, and they're not so much dying anymore. I mean, a remake was a remake, but the new zombie films, it's because something got into the blood, which is interesting. So I would look at these themes as saying this is like the way the genre actually moves. They're trying to hit us where we fear, and it looks like these days we fear infection. I don't know why, quite frankly. Is that a fair point?
Yeah, I mean, in an age infection? When there's probably less infection than there ever has been, we're more terrified of it than ever. And maybe that's why, because it's more unknown. It's something more, something you don't see every day, so it's scarier.
I don't know. You think because of STDs and how, you know, we're supposedly getting those under control, and maybe it's this whole bird flu, swine flu thing. Oh, no, world epidemic. Maybe that they're preying on that, but I really don't understand why it's the issue of the blood now.
Well, we could argue that it's, again, if you want to get philosophical about it, STDs.
Hear him sigh. He's like, oh, do I have to?
I'm just thinking. I don't want to have to drag you guys down a path you don't want to go down. But I think, what about STDs and AIDS and things like that?
Yeah, but aren't they passé by now? Like, yeah. I'm just wondering though. It's kind of weird.
I don't know. I'm still scared of it. So.
Well, I don't mean to make the subject. I don't mean to look down on it. But I mean the sense, like in the '80s, AIDS were horrible. I mean, people were freaking out. In the year 2000, even SARS is old school now.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's difficult.
But you still have the big scares, and people do, like, I'm just thinking of the H1N1 thing, which was really a non-event. But, I mean, people were going crazy, like, what was that, last year or the year before?
I think it was the year before.
And then I don't know about the U.S., but I know in Canada, the government then rushed these vaccines to market because everyone's freaking out, and then the vaccines are actually killing people because they're actually deadlier than H1N1 because they weren't, you know, they're rushed to market because they need to deal with this epidemic that's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you could figure out what people are going to be scared of in 10 years, you'll corner the zombie market. It looks to me like the zombie is reinvented. It's the one monster that just keeps on giving, because you need it to do this, it can do that. Even though it's supposed to be the brain dead and most unadaptable of all things, it adapts to our fears. And that's what makes it the great cash cow. I mean, if you line up against any other kind of horror movie, the zombie film probably has more made of it.
Mm. So I think we've maybe already gone there a little bit, but, I mean, I've said, like, it's like a zombie craze. I mean, even movies as awful as the Resident Evil films, it's like a license to print money putting out one of these films. I mean, it's got Mia Jovovich as an added selling feature, I suppose. But I mean, you know, it seems like zombies continuously pop. I mean, they've even got a TV series on zombies now. I mean, you know, there isn't a space exploration TV series out there anymore, but there's zombies. So this is what's capturing the imagination of people now. So what does each of you think? And then I'll throw in my two cents of a reason I think it might be so popular. Why do you think this is so, like, resonating with people so much and making it so popular at this in this time frame?
Well, I think it's hard to find a scarier idea. I mean, you can think of vampires and werewolves. You've seen where they've gone. We're looking at Twilight over there now. So, but zombies, they represent a lot of things that are completely scary about the world. First of all, people who were long gone are coming back. The dead are coming back to life. Every one of them that dies, every one of us that dies adds one more to them. It can happen to anybody. Getting eaten alive. I mean, these are things that are always going to be scary. You know, at the end of the world, those are just it's just terrifying to think that could ever happen. And obviously, I don't think it could, but you never know. It's just I don't know. I get very uncomfortable to think about having to try to live in a zombie world. I know that.
Matthew, what do you think?
I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie, so I don't mind when things get a bit crazy. But yeah, zombie apocalypse is not exactly on my to-do list. But I think it's because versus other monsters, when you are confronted with the zombie, you're confronted with yourself in the sense of humanity, the human face and the rot and the fact that you will be that one day. Maybe not a walking dead, but you will be a corpse. And in this day and age where death is taboo and people don't like talking about it, I think it's the release valve and the morbid fascination, the reason we slow down at a car accident, the reason why we can't turn away when we see something horrible and gory. There's just this fascination that comes out because it's us, and I think the zombie represents that, and I think that's why it's so popular. I don't know about you guys, but here they have zombie walks, and 3,000 to 5,000 people will show up like zombies, you know, on their makeup and their torn clothes, and they'll shamble down a parade route, and this is great fun. I mean, this is bizarre behavior. It's obviously quite fun for these people to dress up and do this, but it's just like, we're literally dressing up like dead things. This is incredible. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting take with the repression about death, because in the past, death was something that was, in a way, much more familiar to people, and it wasn't kind of a taboo subject.
Well, yeah, because we preserve our dead now. When you go to the funeral home, they pump them full of fluids. They're not, rotting. I mean, I don't want to get onto sensitive issues here, but we all know how we treat our dead. The whole idea of seeing somebody half decomposed, especially a loved one, that's why, it's always the dramatic scene in the zombie movie when one of the group turns and they've got to kill him or her. That's the dramatic, emotionally charged moment. And we don't see death in our society really anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting take. So I'm going to take it down a little bit different avenue, because I've still got Dr. E. Michael Jones's Monsters from the Id on my mind that we discussed in the context of our alien discussion last week, and perhaps I'll throw out a link for that today, because I neglected to do that during the alien show. If anyone listened to the alien show, is listening to this one, and then listens to the alien show after hearing us referring back to it, and this book from Dr. E. Michael Jones, fascinating, fascinating read. They want $100 for a used copy on Amazon, but if you go to culturewars.com/books.htm, you'll find it for $24.95, inclusive of shipping, I think, within the United States. So I recommend that book if you're interested in the horror genre. So the to recap, the theme from Dr. Jones in that book is horror stories in general and their popularity in general, not just zombie shows. His thesis is that when the moral order is suppressed, it reasserts itself in the form of an avenging monster. So from that perspective, the zombie is another one of these avenging monsters. And I think of it further in the context of the zombie apocalypse. It's the complete downfall of society. You see the ruined buildings. Everything that we're used to is in decay and falling apart. Not just the people are zombies and rotting, but the whole infrastructure of society is decayed. And as I was thinking before the show, I'm thinking, is there a certain resonance among people that people know at some level that the Enlightenment didn't work or didn't deliver the goods it promised, and that, there's something wrong with our society. They don't know what it is, but this is why this resonates, because there's almost this sense that something's going to give and this is all going to fall apart at some point anyway. What do you guys think of that?
No, I can agree with that. I think there's a lot of things behind a zombie to be scared of. There's a lot of things about the meaning behind it, and obviously, I think, as I said with Romero's stuff, it's all a commentary on us and how we are doing. And I think that's a very good take on it. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'd agree as well.
Yeah, and I think that go along with why all these end-of-the-world and apocalypse stories seem to be. I mean, they've been popular for a while, but they seem to be especially popular of late. There's been quite a few films that are of that end-of-civilization theme. And, I mean, just this summer you've got, we've had a couple, and now the names of them are escaping me, but the one with Tom Cruise and then the one with Will Smith. After Earth was...
In Oblivion,
right. So, well, we're at about the halfway point, or a little bit past it. If anyone's just joining us, you're listening to Swords in Space on the AMDG Radio Network. And today we are discussing zombie genre in science fiction / horror in fiction. And then we're now going to be moving on to a discussion of the most recent offering in that genre, World War Z. So let's carry on into that then. I haven't seen the film, so I'm just going to kind of sit back and throw out questions and maybe some random commentary for the two of you. But I know you've both seen it, so first, quick recap, starting with Matthew and then Jason. What did you think of it?
Good,
bad, ugly.
Well, I actually asked you to lob it to Jason first, so he can kind of give the viewers a synopsis. I haven't read the books, and he'd be probably much better at maybe to do a contrast there, or at least say where the movie was going, or maybe the neglected thing. So if I can back off, let Jason do it.
Okay.
Well.
Pass the buck. Okay, well, Jason, why don't you give us a quick synopsis as well as you're giving us your brief review, and then
sure.
We'll get into things in more detail.
Well, World War Z is originally a book written by Max Brooks. I do not recall the release date at the top of my head of the book, but it's been out for a while, and this movie has been on the board for a while. Finally released, I'm sure it's been changed a bunch in the meantime, but the book itself takes, essentially is about a reporter who's used as a framing device, and he is essentially going around and interviewing people about the war, and the zombie war, the rising of the dead, and humanity's battle with them. And what's interesting about this book versus other zombie stories is you get the whole shebang. You get the outbreak, you get the war itself, and then you get the hopeful steps towards recuperation at the end of that. The book itself, very good, but it's interesting because it does not necessarily have a main character. Even the reporter is just a framing device throughout. You're going to hear the takes of probably every nation around the world. You get to hear little pieces of from how every nation dealt with this war throughout. So that would be a very difficult movie, as we were talking before the show, Nicholas. That would be a very difficult movie to make. So I think... for fans of the book, you have to make the concession that this is not going to be like the book. It just could not work that way. We mentioned maybe it worked better as a TV series. That's something that could be a little easier to work with. But the movie itself stars Brad Pitt. It takes place at the very, very beginning of a zombie outbreak. Brad Pitt is a retired UN investigator. They make that sound like it's some kind of big deal in the movie. I didn't know those guys were like Navy SEALs or something, but they make it sound pretty like it's a big deal. And we get to see him and his family going about their business and the outbreak occurring and exciting escapes and all that good stuff. And then they task Brad Pitt with trying to find the cause of the outbreak so that they can then cure it. And so the premise of the movie is that he is traveling to various locations around the world to try to locate this outbreak. He'll get to one location and they'll be like, well, nope, it was over there. So he's traveling, he's kind of jet-setting around the world. I wouldn't call it quite that fabulous, considering what's happening, but the world is losing. As humanity, we're going down, and the movie itself presents a fast zombie and a slow zombie, and there's an interesting take about why there are both. But the fast zombies are very, very creepy in this movie, because they come out, they have... it's almost like insects. It's like you're seeing a bunch of ants run up against a wall. It's what it looks like when you see a bunch of these zombies. They're just coming at you full pace. 1,000 of them. So I don't know how much you want to spoil the movie tonight, but I will tell you that the movie itself, in my opinion, having read the book, I was fully prepared to go into this movie hating it. I was fully prepared for that. But I actually really, really enjoyed it. But I will say this, it doesn't necessarily, it's a zombie movie, but it's more also maybe of an international thriller. It's rated PG-13, so you're not going to have any gore, so you don't have to worry about that. There is violence, but it's not, as a PG-13 movie, it's not as heavy as it could have been. And it has a clear beginning and middle and an end, even though it doesn't necessarily mean the end of the zombie war. It's a good little, it's almost, I told my wife after I got at the movie, I said it's almost like that could have been a part of the book, a story out of the book from once from somebody. So I really enjoyed the movie, and I know we'll have more discussion about the ups and downs about it here in a moment, but I gave it, if we were going on a 5 stars, a 5-point scale, I would have probably said a 4.5 out of 5 on this one, for me.
Well, that's pretty high praise. Matthew, what did you think?
Yeah, I came into this movie not knowing at all what to expect, and I actually enjoyed Brad Pitt films. He picks a pretty good swath of topics and themes. Takes me a while to digest the movie, so this might sound a bit premature, at least to my ears, but there was something about the movie that I just didn't... kind of reminded me of those disaster films that were so popular in the 90s and 2000s. I don't know if you remember that huge Dante's Peak volcano, The Day After Tomorrow, those kind of things, where they'd have the family in a separate thing and the hero trying to get back to his family. You guys remember those?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then also the space asteroid ones, like Armageddon and...
Armageddon.
Yeah, it
had that cross-pollination of, oh, you know, the man's just doing for his family versus huge, epic scope that the hero must face alone. And I didn't really like them. So there was a bit of a bias that bubbled up during the movie. But at the same time, this movie has to be credited for its themes. He's basically hired to find the source of the outbreak. And slowly, as the movie evolves, he comes to realization. So they tackled the whole origin, and then, you know, the next step. That theme is a lot to stuff into there. And they also were smart about it. At one point, he gets blood in his mouth, and this is what I absolutely hate about zombie films, is all this gore. You know, just a little scratch or a drop will turn you, and then the hero will, like, take a machete to something or a chainsaw, and it's all over his face. Or, you know, the hero and his girlfriend will start kissing after, you know, they've just sliced something up, it's all over their face. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But in this movie, Brad Pitt gets it in his mouth, and he's ready to throw himself off a building. He does the countdown 15 seconds. I was like, finally, somebody addressed this. So the little things like that, they paid a lot of great attention, a lot of great action, a lot of great movement. It was interesting watching him deal with it. And, you know, besides the apocalypse, he fights all these disasters and obstacles. But at the end of the day, it just kind of felt... lacking. I don't know what to say. There's something there that just didn't get inside me. This is something I'd play in the background but probably never watch again. Like, you know, you look up at it, watch snippets, and then go back to your work. But I would hit it with a 3 out of 5.
So what Jason said, he didn't, it's almost not really a zombie movie. Like, what do you think? Does it kind of fit in with some of the movies we've been talking about, like, you know, 28 Days Later,
yeah,
Dawn of the Dead, or is it more of like a...
I'm more of a traditionalist and maybe even a classicist when it comes to zombies. There we go. Because it's a 15-second turn rate, you get bit, count to 15, and this was done in the movie several times, 15 seconds, you turn. The body never even hits the ground. The person literally turns. So that, to me, was a very virulent infection. It wasn't really die. I mean, you might be dead now because of... it didn't explain the extent of the infection to the degree of, can we cure it? They kind of came up with a different solution how to deal with it. I'll let you watch it. But I wasn't convinced I was watching a zombie film. So it didn't have the same savagery for some reason that I found in 28 Days Later. Something about 28 Days Later... And, I mean, it's pretty close to the exact same thing, but there was something about 28 Days Later that was just more savage. I think it's the length of the cuts. Nowadays, in modern film, they cut so fast, they don't really build up the kind of brooding terror. And I think that might have been the reason. I still find 28 Days Later a little more freaky, but that might be completely relative.
How would you respond to... some of that.
I agree. I think even I mentioned that it doesn't feel like a complete conclusion. I think that's what's interesting, and if you're a fan of the book, that's why it may work for you, is because the book itself, each individual person's story, is not the conclusion. It's just an aspect of this giant war. They call it a war. Essentially, it's just survival. But so that's why that's probably why it worked for me, is because I went in knowing what the book was, how the book went, the interesting stories throughout the book. And again, I began to just look at it from the point of being one part of this whole big picture. But I that's like I mentioned, it's barely a zombie movie. I mean, doesn't have the. It's implied that they eat people, but they don't really see that happen. I mean, they just really just bite and move on. And as you said, they turn so fast, it doesn't appear. Nobody really has a chance to be infected, and you watch them. You don't get those typical zombie tropes you get from other movies where someone's bitten and they hide it and they turn slowly and then, oh no, they got bit. You know, it doesn't happen because you don't have time. Good luck trying to fake that out, because it's quick. But the takes on it, I would say, probably presented a little more. I hate using this word in reference to a zombie movie, but a little more realistic take on how it might go. And that's scary. I mean, it's something that, and as I said, just the imagery of how the different worlds deal with it, how different worlds, different nations deal with it, is also interesting. The book goes more into detail, but just a couple of examples. Israel is doing the best against the zombies. And everybody asks, why is that? Well, they have built a wall around the country. They have built a giant wall, and they have just been prepared for this, essentially. Now, that wall doesn't last long. Like I said, those army ants crawl right up that wall, right over each other. And North Korea, I think they had a very unique way of handling it. Remember that, Matthew?
Yeah. Hey, I have to admit, it's very practical.
Yeah, North Korea, they pull 23 million people's teeth in 24 hours. So that nobody can get bitten, nobody can get infected. So the world's takes on that are interesting. But I agree, it's not, I would say it's very very loosely a zombie movie all the way across the board. And there is certainly a detachment that you probably don't get. You're not feeling you get the whole story, you're not getting the whole sense. Because, maybe they weren't going this direction, but that's just how I take it. Having read the book, I can now put this story into a certain part of the book. I have a part in mind, as a matter of fact, where it gets hit right into the book pretty easily. But the way they resolve it, I think, is very interesting. Because, again, they don't solve the problem. They learn how to deal with it and live with it, so to speak. So it was good, though. It was good. It's not going to be for everybody, I think. That's for sure.
But it kind of sounds to me like it may have been lacking a bit of that, you know, the zombie is us kind of thing, or does it still? Because it sounds like it's almost, you don't get up close and personal with the zombies as much the way you're describing it.
That's very true.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are scenes where, I mean, the zombies are right in their face, they're smashing their heads against windshields, and, you know, they take shelter, the classic, you know, take shelter with another group, and then they decide to do different things, and the other group gets into trouble. So they do have that, but I mean, that gets to one of my criticisms. The zombies almost appear to gain superhuman abilities, and I think that's another criticism I would have, and I hate to heap it on, but they can jump like 20 feet. They can sprint without tiring. They can rip things apart. They can smash their heads against objects that would break most people's necks. To me, it's too much. It's like, wow, the zombie went from this shambling idiot to the year 2000. These things are just mini supermen, you know? And they seem to have heat-seeking infrared vision, because as soon as they turn, they immediately know if you're in a car or not. They just rush the car. They know you're there. And yet there are several scenes where there are people that cannot be infected for whatever reason. You can see the movie. And they deliberately go around them instead of just bowling them over. When you see their violence, for them to decide not to hit something is bizarre to me. I think they would just trample it. But things like that, I was kind of going, well, you know, it's getting a bit hokey, you know, these super zombies and heat-seeking vision and whatever it was that they were doing. So, but they do get in your face. They do get in your face.
I think my take on a zombie and why it does appear to be superhuman is that it can do what a live person can do. It just doesn't suffer from the same frailties we might. When we can run for a while and we'll get tired, we're like, oh, I can't do it. And they won't. I mean, eventually the body's going to give out. But they have more stamina, arguably, because they don't need stamina. They don't need oxygen. They don't need to do this. They don't need to do that. So that's why that fast zombie thing is scarier to me. They are more aggressive. They're in your face, and you can't outrun them because they're just going to keep running. You'll probably run out of air before they will. But I agree. I mean, I think I agree with you on all of those points. I think it's there are parts that obviously you're going to have to go take a step back and go, wait a minute. But you have to, I think if they had to make it a movie, they had to make some concessions here and there. And again, I know you may say more here than there, but I think they did okay with what they had to do. I think when it came right down to it, trying to make this amazing book that has really been a pretty big seller over this time. And I don't know if you guys have heard general people talking about it, but I certainly have. I heard it through. I kind of read it through peer pressure. Have you read this book yet? Why not?
So I never heard of it until the movie was coming out.
It's a very good book.
Well, I'm interested in picking it up, but I'm wondering if you can comment on, without spoilers, this may or may not be possible, but is there like an overarching social commentary in this one? Like, you know, you're talking about Dawn of the Dead with kind of the commentary about consumerism or something. Is there some
something in this one that... And Matthew, and you let me know if I'm wrong, Matthew. You've also seen it.
I'm ready. You go.
I'll start off with the book first, and I'll tell you this. The book itself has some pretty interesting political kind of, I would almost call it satire, throughout about how the different nations and governments all decide to handle it or don't handle it. But the movie itself, I would say, probably doesn't. I think it tries to with his family and some of the way they dealt with his family. But you don't really get a lot of that, and there's not even when he goes around to the different parts, different nations. Everyone seems fairly willing to help out. There's no real drama between the people, and there's no. And as a result, I don't feel there's any commentary on us. The zombies are not. They don't really get a personality like other zombies. I know that's goofy to say, but there's a certain personality you get from zombie movies, I think. And this one, the zombies were just. They were almost like a prop to the whole story, anyway. Would you agree with that, Matthew?
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. Definitely very political, but like you said, it wasn't so much as the nations sabotaging each other, but what was neat was each nation still defined itself very much as a nation. This whole apocalyptic thing didn't dissolve that. They were very much their own nation, yeah.
Yeah, and they all had their, and again, I hate to keep harping on the book and raving about it, but it's interesting to see how all the different governments allegedly would handle this and how some of the bigger nations really don't do well because... Almost like they're arrogant. You know, some of the small, Israel, I know it's not a small nation, but Israel does very good. Korea, they handle it in their own unique way. Everybody has their own ideas, and that's what makes it interesting. But I would say there's very little political commentary throughout. I think the closest I got from it myself was how the quote-unquote government wanted to handle his family. And again, without spoiling too much, there's some concern there. But
you could argue it, though. You could argue it because the first refuge he takes are with immigrants. We don't even know if they're illegal or not, but they're Cuban?
Mm-hmm.
Cuban? Mexican?
Yep.
So, yeah, the Americans need all this help. And, I mean, we saw the same theme in Romero where in the 1960s it's a black man who's the hero and, you know, things like that. He always had strong black characters, but he does have a minority here at Shelter. Brad Pitt's family, and then, yeah, like you said, they go to these smaller countries. You know, Israel needs America's help, and North Korea, of course, everybody's favorite bad guy these days, and yet they're fine. And then they end up going to Cardiff and Wales. I mean, who the heck cares about Wales, right?
Interesting. Well, that just about takes us to the end of the show. More we could have discussed, and I just realized in the pre-show we were talking about should I go there, shouldn't I go there, about something I noticed about Dawn of the Dead, but I don't think we have time to go down that rabbit hole. So maybe another show we can revisit the zombie topic, because it's sure to garner lots of downloads given the continued popularity, and no doubt World War Z won't be the last film in this genre. So you've been listening to Swords in Space on the AMDG Radio Network, and our topic tonight was the zombie genre craze and the latest offering, World War Z. And my guests tonight were Matthew Zepp and Jason Fraser, and very grateful once again to have both of you with me. And before we sign off, we have to do the Event Horizon segment of the show. And Matthew, one of your people from Brav's Index has got a book published recently. Why don't you tell us a bit about that briefly?
Well, this is totally inappropriate, but it's a children's book. yeah, it's called The Bronze Dragon. It's meant for ages 7 to 12. Man, I can't stop laughing. Yes, okay, serious now. Yeah, it's just out. We had it's illustrated. It's our seminal work. It's our first one available in print. You can read it online, but since it has the pictures and usually children like to handle the books, I'm definitely pushing for print copies to be sold if they could. We've already gone through a first printing, so thank you anyone out there who's already bought it. And, yeah, we're very excited. Hopefully it's just the beginning of many more offerings. This one's children's book, but we will be getting some more adult-oriented sci-fi, fantasy, and fiction. But, yeah, thanks for the plug.
Right. So The Bronze Dragon, that's by J.C. Mathis. And where's the best place to buy it? Just go to bravsindex.com?
Yep, you can go to bravsindex.com, and there's a link. I haven't updated the site this week, but the link will be up anyway. And it should be in the first box there. You can just click it. It'll take you to a page. And you can read it, like I said beforehand, to judge whether or not it's up to your quality standards and so on. But, yeah, definitely check it out. Please. Please do.
All right. So so maybe some of those listening to the show, their children, might enjoy that. although there's nothing wrong with adults reading books that are geared towards lower ages, you know.
I think it's a good story. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've bought my copy, but I haven't had time to read it yet. But it looked good from the quick skimming that I did on it. So always want to promote these sorts of works, new up-and-coming authors. And I know you'll return the favor when I finally get off my butt and get some of my stuff rolling.
It's going to happen, Nicholas. You just keep going.
Yeah. So thank you again, both of you, for joining me for another very interesting discussion. And for our listeners, if you liked this show, you want to share it with anyone, you can download it from blogtalkradio.com/AMDG, and you'll find all the Swords and Space shows on there. Or this episode and all other episodes of Swords and Space can be downloaded from iTunes. Just go into iTunes store and search Swords in Space, and you'll find us under the podcast. And, of course, just a reminder, you can find us on the web as well at www.swordsandspace.com. So thank you for listening. We're going to take next week off since it's the Dominion Day up here and then Independence Day down south of the border, so I figured lots of people will be traveling, and we've done 3 shows in 2 weeks, so I think it's time for Swords and Space to take a bit of a breather, but we'll be back in July, and I hope to have you with us, and I'm sure we'll have many more interesting conversations. So thanks again, gentlemen, and And I'll leave our listeners with some more of that World War Z soundtrack.